Thank you, worship team. Well, friends are important. In fact, they are just about essential. And the writer of Ecclesiastes shares this conviction. He writes, "There was a man all alone. It was miserable. Two are better than one." Well, how so? He spells it out. "If one falls down, his friend can help him up. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up." So this morning we want to take a look at what Proverbs has to say on this important area in our life. And why be so concerned about what Proverbs says on this topic? For two reasons. Firstly, this biblical book has quite a bit to say about friends and friendship. And secondly, the purpose of Proverbs is to give you and me wisdom. Well, what's wisdom? The Hebrew word translated wisdom means ability, skill. It's used of a woman who has the ability to take fabric and weave beautiful clothes out of it. The word wisdom is used of a ship's captain who has the skill of sailing his ship from one harbor across the sea to the desired harbor on the other side. So what is wisdom to you and me? Wisdom is the ability, the skill to handle life correctly. Cannot I, as a Christian with God in my life, live without friends? Can I maintain good oral hygiene without the help of a dentist? Probably not. The presence of God in our life is not meant to be a substitute for our having friends. God's presence in my life doesn't eliminate the need that I have for food and water. We saw in studying 2 Timothy that when Paul was in prison, he asked two times for one of his closest friends, Timothy, to come visit me soon. Paul needed a friend. We recall Jesus taking his three closest friends into Gethsemane with himself, needing their help in his moment of suffering and asking his friends to pray with him. Storms are headed our way. They will blow intensely across our path, and we need the help of friends to assist us in weathering those storms. But not all friends are good friends. They're not all helpful. They can be quite harmful. So again, we want to take a look at what Proverbs has to say about this. Now please, to assist us in doing that, please find this bulletin in your handout. This is the insert that we're going to use as we quickly work our way through Proverbs on friends. Now, I have not listed all the verses in Proverbs on friends and friendships, just those that I think will give us a good idea of what the book has to say about that, about this topic. And just having these verses right in front of us will make it unnecessary for us to take our Bible and turn from passage to passage. Now, the first verse at the top of your handout is a bit of a surprise, I suspect. It says, "He who has too many friends is on the verge of ruin." We tend to think just the opposite. We tend to think like this. You can't have too many friends. In fact, the more, the merrier. This verse is saying the exact opposite. The person who has too many friends is not far from disaster. Why? If we have too many friends, we have cast our net too widely. And in bringing that net in, true, we brought in some good fish, but we brought in some bad fish. If I have too many friends, I have not been careful enough in selecting my friends. And this, the last half of that verse says, "But there is a true friend who sticks closer than a brother." God can give you such a true, blue, loyal friend. And what this verse is saying, a person doesn't need a whole lot of friends. In fact, a whole lot of friends is not a good thing. We only need a few, a handful of good friends. Now, since too many friends are detrimental, the next passage, 12:26, urges us, "A righteous person must carefully examine his neighbor." The neighbor is a potential friend. And what this is saying is, before you choose somebody to be your friend, before you let somebody get close to you, do this. Keep him, her at an arm's length. Examine that person. Try and put your finger on that person's moral pulse. Does this person have a relationship with Christ? What kind of moral standards does he or she have? What's his attitude toward those in authority over him, over her? Now, why should we examine a person as a potential friend? Look at the last line. For the character and conduct of the wicked can lead you and me astray. The New Testament puts it like this. Don't be deceived. Bad company does indeed corrupt your good morals. Now, I mentioned this one time before from the pulpit in a different sermon. When my son Joseph was in college, he asked a high school girl, Tracy, to go to the coffee shop with him. And as they were sipping coffee, he said, Tracy, your brother is my best friend. I know real well the gang you run with, friends. And I'm here to tell you, you're messing with the wrong kind of friends. And if you don't stop hanging out with those friends, you're going to end up being hurt. That caution went in Tracy's ear here and came out the other ear. Then he showed me 2 years later the letter that Tracy wrote him. And she said, Joseph, remember when you took me out to the coffee shop and warned me about my friends? You were right. I should have broken off. I didn't do so. I have regrets and scars now from those friends that I will suffer with the rest of my life. Now, we might look at 12:26 and say, this is wonderful advice for young people like middle school and high school, but I'm an adult. I don't need this. And I've also mentioned this man to you. I was the interim pastor of a church south of Chicago years ago. For me, the best part of the worship service was when Rocky, 40-year-old man, construction worker with his hands, stood and prayed audibly. He was newly converted to Christ. He was so in love with Jesus. His prayers were simple and unsophisticated. It was just delightful listening to that man talk to the Lord. He had a wonderful wife. His mistake, he went back to his old drinking buddies. They took him around to the bars. They got him to join them in chasing women. He divorced his wife, Melissa. And now he is far from God and miserable. Here was a fellow so in love with Jesus, close to Jesus, started hanging around the wrong friends, and now he's far away from them. 12:26 is not just for young people, it's for you and me as well. Now Stacy and Rocky learned the truth of the next verse, 13:20, the hard way. He who walks with wise people will himself become wise. Their wisdom can rub off on you and me. However, look at the last part of that verse. But the companion of fools will suffer harm. These foolish friends are headed toward disaster. And if you are among them, the roof that falls on their head will fall on your head as well. You and I are going to be just like the friends we hang around. And what happens to them is going to happen to us as well. Now, the next two verses are examples of the harm from the wrong kind of friends can inflict on us. 22:24. Don't be a friend of a hot-tempered man, nor associate with a person easily angered. Now, let me pause right here before we go any further. We have a figure of speech here called synecdoche, where one kind of vice, anger, is put for all other kinds of vices. Not only should we not have a friend who is an angry person, but one who is characterized by lying, stealing, on drugs, sexually immoral, rebellious, etc., etc. There are certain vices that the Bible warns us about that not only should we not have them in our life, we shouldn't have friends who are characterized by these vices. This passage is just using one of them as an example, anger. And that's why it says in 22:24, don't be a friend of a hot-tempered man, nor associate with a person easily angered. Why not? Look at the next verse, 22:25. So you won't adopt his character and conduct. Now, experts tell us behavior is learned by us as we observe other people. You hang around, you have a friend who is an angry person, we learn from him. And we probably are going to pick up his angry ways. So you don't adopt his character and conduct and thus bring disaster upon yourself. This is what awaits us. Now, I was interim pastor of another church in Chicago. And in it was a high school student named Ryan. And he got sent to juvenile detention in Chicago. And his family asked me to visit him. And so as I was talking to Ryan, I asked him, do you like being here? No, I hate it. This place is awful. Ryan, why are you here? Here's what he said. Back home, I had the wrong friends. I was a good guy until I started hanging out with these particular friends. They got in trouble with the law. I got in trouble with the law. What is Proverbs saying? We are going to be just like the people we hang with. And I said, when you get out, what are you going to do different? I am going to break off from those wrong friends, and I'm going to go back to my good friends. Ryan got out, and he went right back to his bad friends and got in trouble with the law again. Only this time, the law didn't send him to the detention center in Chicago, downstate to a stricter juvenile detention center where he stayed a longer period of time. A wise person learns from his mistakes. Remember the way insanity has been defined? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over, but expecting a different outcome. Now, 19:4 speaks about fair weather friends. Wealth makes many friends. Now, if you have a lot of money, there are going to be people who know it, and you'll have a lot of friends buzzing around you. And they are presenting themselves as your friends. And why so many friends? Because they're trying to get their hand in your pocket. They're not after your friendship. They're after your wallet. They're after your money. And the last part of that verse says, but the only friend of a poor man separates himself from him. If you don't have a lot of money, your superficial friends will leave. They will abandon you, afraid that you may need some of their resources. We need to remember what God's Word has to say about poor friends. Blessed is he who helps the poor. The Lord will deliver him in trouble. Now, maybe I mentioned this businessman up in New York. He got old. He retired. His wife had died earlier. Nobody knew he was a multimillionaire. He moved from one part of New York to another, started living in a simple apartment, didn't dress very well, that is, very expensively, and only one person in his neighborhood was a friend to him, a New York City fireman. And they would take long walks at night together and talk. And the fireman recognized from the man's dress and the apartment he lived in that he must not have much money, not knowing he was a multimillionaire. And eventually the fireman said, now, I don't mean to insult you, but if you need any food, you need some clothing, don't hesitate to ask. I don't have a lot of money, but my wife and I are willing to help you a bit. And the man just said, no, I'm fine. The old man died. He made that fireman the sole heir of his will. The fireman was shocked when millions of dollars came to him through his friend's estate. 19:6 informs us of one reason people befriend others. Many court the favor of an important person. If you're an important person, again, you'll have a lot of people buzzing around you, presenting themselves as your friend. And why are they doing that? What can you, in your position of authority, do for me? And everyone is a friend to him who gives gifts. Now, I saw some years ago on the evening news, here was a Colombian drug lord down in South America standing on the street corner with a wad of cash, handing out dollar bills, I don't know what denominations, to people. And there was a line of people a block or two long standing in line. They would come up to him one by one, and he would give each of them some money. So if you've got money, if you give gifts, again, you'll have, there'll be a lot of people who present themselves as your friends. They are there to take your money, your gifts. 27:14 warns us of flattery. When a person loudly praises his friend, loudly, too much praise. Early in the morning, praise is given at the wrong time. Let him view such lavish flattery as a cloak to conceal evil intent. He's trying to butter you up in order to get something from you. Albert Speer was a cabinet member of Adolf Hitler. He was in a high-ranking member in the Nazi organization in World War II. And as a result of that, Albert Speer spent years in prison after the war. Well, he was asked, how could you get so close to such an evil person as Hitler? And Speer said, it's hard to recognize the devil when his arm is around you. What does he mean by that? Adolf Hitler praised him, gave him gifts, and sucked him into the evil organization of the Nazis. And Proverbs is warning us of a person who gives you and me praise we don't deserve and gives it at the wrong time. Now, what can you and I, what can make you and me desirable as a friend? 22:11. The person pure in life and gracious in speech. Notice Paul's right there. Such wonderful virtues as those attract the attention of other people. The person pure in life and gracious in speech is a friend to those in authority. In Birmingham, Alabama, there was a Christian woman who was a secretary to a high-powered CEO. And one day the CEO, the boss of the business, handed her a letter and asked the secretary to type it up. She read it, and she handed the letter back to the boss and said, I cannot type that letter because I know that you are deliberately misleading our customers. And if I type it, I'm just as guilty of deceit as you. And the boss said, you're my employee. I'm telling you to type that letter. She said, I can't do it with a clear conscience. Either you type that letter or I will fire you. And he did. She refused to type it. Some time passed and that CEO discovered that the treasurer in his business was embezzling funds, stealing money from the company. He fired the treasurer. Now he needs a new treasurer. Who's he going to get that's honest? Who comes to mind? The secretary. She would not do wrong. I could not get her to type a misleading letter. So when he dismissed the treasurer, he hired that ex-secretary because he knew she was morally righteous and he could trust his bank account into her hands. Look at that verse again. The person pure in life and gracious in speech is a friend to a king, to a CEO, to those in authority. If you and I have growing in us the character and the conduct of Christ, it will be winsome, attractive to other people, and not just anybody, to those people who are important in positions of authority. Now, 18:22 identifies a special friend. He who acquires a good wife acquires good fortune. Where does she come from? He obtains special favor from the Lord. Now, that verse is saying two things. Our spouse ought to be our best friend. But the verse is saying something else. There's only one source of a good spouse, right here. And those of you who are not yet married should be talking to God about your future spouse. There's only one place you and I can get a good husband or wife from, and that is from the Lord. Now, 17:17 describes genuine friends. A true friend loves you at all times, in good and bad times, whether you're rich or poor, whether you need that friend or not. He'll love you at all times. And a sibling, that would be a brother or sister, is divinely intended to share your adversity. A brother or sister is divinely intended to share your adversity. I had an article from the newspaper that talked about a man down in Florida whose older brother had cancer, and he needed to be tested to see if his bone marrow would be compatible with his older brother and give him a chance to survive. And the younger brother said, I will not even consider being tested to see if my bone marrow can help increase the likelihood of my older brother surviving. I am not a forgiving person. My older brother is as much a brother to me as he is to you. He refused to help out. Sometime later, when that article was published, a man down in Florida read that. He traced down the younger brother, who refused to be tested and said, I'll pay you $10,000 if you'll have the test to see if your bone marrow is compatible. And he did it. He accepted the $10,000, not because he cared about his brother, but because he wanted money. Now, what is this saying? If God has given you a brother or sister, God is looking down the path of your life, and he sees that you've got trouble coming. And your brother and sister ought to be the first persons there to help each other. 27:17 concerns the effect that friends have on each other. As one iron tool is sharpened by another iron tool, so a man refines the face, the condition of his friend. Sometimes the influence that one person has on another is so obvious, you can pick that influence up from the face. A coin has two sides, and so does this verse. Godly people can sharpen you and me in our morals and godliness in our relationship with God. But turn that coin on the other side. A person who is sharp in the ways of the world, sin, ungodliness, can sharpen you and me in that they can exert a bad influence upon us. Now, 27:10 gives advice regarding friends. Don't forsake your friend or your parents' friend. Why not? You may need them. You may need their help, their prayers, their godly advice. So don't forsake your friend or your parents' friend, and don't go to your brother's house in a time of trouble. Now, that seems strange. Why not go to your brother's house? Better is a friend who is near than a brother who is far away. Now, let's interpret near and far away. It may be you're in trouble. And okay, you got a brother or sister geographically who is a long way off. Better to go to your friend who lives closer to you and get help than to your brother or sister that lives a long way off. But let's interpret near and far away in a different manner. Emotionally, maybe you've got a sibling who lives close to you, but he, like that brother down in Florida, doesn't care anything about you. And if you go to that brother or sister who doesn't care for you, that person's not likely to help you. So better to go to a friend who is near you, emotionally close to you. That friend is more likely to help you than a brother or sister who doesn't care for you. The next verse, 27:9, mentions one way friends can help. As perfume delights the scent. Well, we all enjoy delightful, pleasant aromas. As perfume delights the scent, so intimacy with a friend springs from his heartfelt advice given out of concerns. Friends should discuss their problems with each other. And doing this and offering counsel and praying for each other, what does it do? Here's what it does. It just bonds those friends closer and closer together. Two hearts that suffer together are brought closer together. When you go through adversity, discuss that with your friends, your close friends. Get their advice. Get their prayers. Don't fight these battles alone. 27:6 mentions another way friends help. Sincere and well meant are the wounds given by a friend. Now, what's meant by wounds? Valid constructive criticism. Why is it called wounds? It hurts you to give that constructive criticism or rebuke. It hurts your friend to hear it. But look at it. Sincere and well-meant are the wounds given by a friend, but plentiful and deceptive are the kisses of a foe. What are the kisses of a foe? Flattery, buttering you up, telling you what you want to hear. 24:26 confirms that truth. As one who kisses on the lips, so is a person who gives an honest answer. A true friend is willing to tell you the truth. A true friend will tell you not what you want to hear, but what you need to hear. Now, maybe I mentioned this, I can't remember. But about 5 years ago, one of our lady students at Moody asked me to have lunch with her in the school cafeteria. And we sat down to eat. She said, Dr. Sauer, I'm beginning to realize how important it is for me to have the input of an older man in my life. I have a dad. He doesn't care for me, won't give me the time of day. And I would like you, while I'm at Moody, to be the older man. And I asked her, what are you looking for? She said, I want an older man that I can discuss problems with, that I can get some advice from. I'd like for you to pray with me. I'd like for you to peer into my life and tell me what I'm doing right and tell me what I'm doing wrong. And I said, okay, I'll be that older man. And I said, just let me know whenever you want to meet. And so we did that year. From time to time, she would ask to get together. We'd talk about issues, problems. We'd pray together. And one of those times we were together, she said, lots of boys ask my roommate out for a date, but nobody asked me out. I'd like a boyfriend too. I knew why boys didn't ask her out. And how would I know? I'm a man. And secondly, I knew what her ex-boyfriend told me why he broke up with her. So I could have told her. I didn't want to. It would hurt. And so I discussed with Sue, should I tell this young lady why boys are not interested in her? And Sue said, if that was your daughter, what would you do? Oh, I'd tell her. Okay, Sue said, that's what you've got to do. And so I said, God, I am not going to tell this girl why boys are not interested in her unless you give me clearly an opportunity to do it, and I hope you don't. Next year, we were having lunch together talking, and she asked, I wish I knew why boys didn't ask me out for a date. And I thought, oh, no, this is it. God, you are giving me the chance, and I was hoping she'd never say that again. So I said to her, to me, you are the most attractive young woman on this campus. But do you think it might help if you would slim up a bit and lose some weight? In her eyes, I could see pain. That was it. She no longer ever asked to meet with me. From that point on, she would have nothing at all to do with Dr. Sauer. What is Proverbs saying? The wounds given by a friend are well meant. An enemy is willing, so to speak, to kiss you, flatter you, butter you up, tell you what you need to hear. A friend is willing to tell you what you need to hear, though it's hard for him to say that, and it's hard for you to accept that. 17:18 offers you and me caution. A person lacking sense countersigns another's note, thus becoming responsible for his friend's debt. Now, we may think naively, well, if I'm really his friend, and if I really care for him, I'll become responsible for his debt. And what's Proverbs saying? If you do, you are lacking good judgment. Now, let's qualify that. Do not become responsible for somebody's debt unless you are willing not to be repaid, because chances are you won't be, even though your friend says he will. Or secondly, you can assume his debt and not be financially injured yourself. Or thirdly, not being paid back won't injure your friendship with this person. Or lastly, you know the friend who borrows from you is so utterly trustworthy, he will die before he refuses to pay you back. So if any of those exceptions apply to you, go ahead and sign somebody's note and become responsible for a debt. But Proverbs is saying, don't do it. Now, 16:28 identifies something that can destroy friendship. A perverse person spreads strife. He stirs up trouble. And a gossip can separate close friends. Now, if you hear somebody criticizing, complaining about your close friend, what can that gossip do? He can come between you and your close friend. He can destroy your friendship. Don't listen to the gossip, the criticisms made of your friend. 17:9 tells how we can keep friends. He who conceals an offense shows love. Now, what does it mean to conceal an offense? Your friend does something wrong. What does it mean to conceal it? Well, it means, first of all, you conceal it by forgiving that person of the wrong he did. And secondly, don't go public with it. Don't tell other people the wrong your friend did. He who conceals an offense shows love. But he who keeps harping on that offense, you keep throwing your friend's mistake back up in his face, holding it over his head, you can lose that friend. And our last verse cautions us that friendships are fragile. They are not made out of iron. A friend offended is harder to be won than a strong fortress. And the contentions between alienated friends are as difficult to break down as the bars guarding a citadel. Now, let me just use these false names here who talked about referring to two best friends years ago at Moody. Kelsey did something wrong. Her best friend, Tammy, of course, knew it. But rather than concealing that wrong that Kelsey did, Tammy publicized it, told their mutual friends. And when the word got back to Kelsey that Tammy had squealed on her and informed their mutual friends, she was furious. And Tammy apologized. And Kelsey said, okay, I'll forgive you, but I don't want to be close to you anymore. Those two girls who used to be just like that, for the rest of their time at Moody, they were like that. Kelsey had forgiven. She didn't want to be close to Tammy anymore. What's that verse saying? The closer and the more intimate the friendship, the greater the offense can be. Now, as we look back over these verses on Proverbs, what are they saying to us? Friends are essential. We don't need many, just a handful of really good friends. And the way that we're measuring really good friends are morally healthy and sound, as well as loyal to us. Secondly, choose your friends wisely. They will exert an influence on you, and it's unlikely to be neutral. Their influence is going to be good or not good. It's going to be helpful or it's going to be destructive. Thirdly, friends pray for one another. I want to know, are you praying for any friend of yours? Now let's turn that same coin on the other side. Do you have a close friend that you've asked and you know is praying for you? Why should we do that? Confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. Now that healing has to do not with the body, but with the soul, moral healing. The effective prayer of a righteous person can accomplish a great deal. Part of our victory in the Christian life is going to be dependent upon our friends praying for us. Fourthly, friends help one another. Are you doing that? Well, let's put the question this way. Do you have any friend in your life who is there to lend you a helping hand? Bear one another's burdens and thus fulfill, look at this, the law of Christ. Jesus demands that we put our shoulder beneath the burdens and problems of our friends and help them. Keep in mind, our friends are limited in their sympathy and what they can do for us. Your best friends can only do so much for you and no more. The heart knows its own bitterness. Something bad happens to you, and your friends and your family see you that you're hurting, you're sad, they're sad too. They can't feel the pain to the extent that you can. Why? They're not in your shoes. The bad happened to you, not to them. The other side of that coin is just as true. A stranger does not share its joy. Something good happens to you, your friends see you rejoicing, and because they love you, they rejoice, they're glad too. They can't taste the joy to the extent that you can. Why? They're not in your shoes. The good happened to you and not to them. So friends can only go so far. So our best friend is the Lord. He is unlimited in what he can do for us. We need to lean more on him. He knows our pain better than our friends. He knows our joy better than our friends. So friends are important. Our chief friend is the Lord, but the Lord in our life is no substitute for the friends with skin on. Let's choose our friends wisely. They can be an immense help to you and me in a number of ways, and we can be to them. Lord, thank you so much for your friendship. And Jesus, you called your disciples your friends. How few times in the Bible, Lord, do you call people your friends? And we want to be that type of person with you. Give us wisdom in cultivating our relationship with you, so that you view us as your friend and we view you as our friend. And Lord, I pray, give each of us just a handful, a few really good, wise, moral, godly friends who can sharpen and refine us in the ways of morality and godliness. And we can have that same effect on them. Give us good judgment in choosing our friends. Help us to recognize those
who would be good for us, and those that we should shun. And Lord, as our friend, I ask that you would be pleased to go through this week with each of us. Lord, draw near, take us by the hand, be a shield around us, and keep us safe physically, socially, morally. Deliver us from the evil one. Deliver us from the enticements of the world. Bless the labor of our hand in the home, outside the home. And grant us, Lord, a portion of your joy and your peace. As our friend, be our partner this week in all that we do. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen. Let's have a good week, and you are excused.